Well, the biggest thing that I say to people all the time is like, you know, courage isn't the lack of fear. Courage is being afraid and doing what's right anyway. So yeah. What a courageous move on your part.
And I haven't regretted it at all.
Welcome to Doing the Work. If you're okay with living a boring life with below average results, this is not your podcast. Go ahead and tune out now. But if you want to live an amazing life full of purpose, love, joy, abundance, and elite health and fitness, you've come to the right place. This podcast is for people who are ready to stop making excuses and start doing the work that creates a life that they love. I'm your host, Ethan Schindler, an airborne ranger turned social worker turned strength coach turned entrepreneur. I've spent my entire life learning how to be uncommon among the uncommon. I found my purpose in empowering people to reach their full potential, and this podcast takes a deep dive in how to prioritize what matters, do the work, own your life, maintain compassion and kindness, and risk failure while enjoying every moment along the way. I talk to people who inspire me and share their gifts with you. This is my way of helping you find what sets you on fire and keeps the fire burning. The Doing the Work podcast is brought to you by the Bastrop Fitness Project, Bastrop's hub for health and wellness. Check them out at www.bastropfitnessproject.com.
All right. Well, I am here with my mom, Bev Woolley. Mom, you are, I wanted you on this show because obviously you've been such an inspiration to me as a person who, you know, you've been through quite a few things in your life, and you've never made any excuses. You haven't let that hold you back. Well, I shouldn't say we all make excuses, but you've still accomplished your goals. You've done some pretty big things. Being a small town Kansas farm girl who was a single mom, and you know, you just didn't let anything hold you back. So thank you for being who you are in my life, and thanks for being on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here. You know, I always look at you for inspiration. So, you know, I think I've done a good job of raising you as fair as I could. That's the army that I heard of you. Hey, it was good.
Well, you got me that far. You know, you kept me alive.
Thank God.
Kept me alive and out of jail for
18 years.
For 18 years. Yeah. Yeah. So, what have you been up to lately? What have you been doing?
You know, sitting here in Kansas, it's fall. I was hoping to be traveling at this time of the year, but I have things to do here, so I'm stuck.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Where were you going to travel?
I was going to go west, like I always do, or, you know, south and west for the winter where it's warmer.
I call my mom a gypsy to everyone. So she likes to pack up her, RV, and she's traveled all over the place. And another reason why I'm really proud of you, you know, after dad died, you know, you were on your own and you didn't, you know, well, I guess you've always been very independent, but, you know, you just picked up and started traveling and doing all kinds of stuff that I think a lot of people would have been afraid to do.
Well, it was scary. But I was so unhappy just working and paying the mortgage and car payments and stuff. And it was a book that you gave me right off. I don't remember the name of it. It was a book you gave me that made me reevaluate what I was doing. And traveling was one of those things that I felt that if I didn't do it, I was going to be unhappy. And it took some research. And I thought it was weird that a single older woman wanted to travel. But when I did some research, there's a lot of women out there traveling. And so that inspired me to get my pickup and my fifth wheel and sell the house and take off for a couple years. And I got to see places that I had been wanting to see. And now that's really in my blood. And I want to go back to traveling again. I came to Kansas to help take care of my mom and dad.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I love that. Well, the biggest thing that I say to people all the time is like, you know, courage isn't the lack of fear. Courage is being afraid and doing what's right anyway. So yeah. What a courageous move on your part.
And I haven't regretted it at all.
Yeah. Where all have you been? I think I know some of the places, but like, what's kind of a quick rundown of all the places you've traveled to?
Well, so I started out in Austin. So I went through Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Utah, Nevada, a little bit of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and came right around back to Texas. And I did that a couple of times.
Yeah, and you stayed in a lot of those places for prolonged periods of time. It wasn't like you were just driving through.
Correct. That took me 2 years.
Yeah.
And then for 2 years, I decided to take a job in Arizona, and I was in Kingman, Arizona for 2 years working as a nurse practitioner, and started traveling again.
That's right. I forgot about
that. That's when I came back to Kansas to help take care of mom and dad.
Yeah. And what do they call it? The types of people who are in RVs that are like kind of off the grid.
Some, they call them boondockers.
Boondockers.
Van dwellers, for people that live in vans. And I was in a movie, Nomadland. I was an extra.
And I still haven't seen the movie yet. I keep meaning to, but it's kind of about people who are boondockers, right?
Van dwellers. It was basically van dwellers. So my friend, Charlene Swanky, was kind of a main character in that movie. And because I knew her, she invited us to be extras for her memorial service, in which, you know, was in the movie, but not in life. But all of our parts got cut out. So, but you can see me back there. If you know that I'm at, I'm a blurry figure on the other side of a campfire. So I see me, but everybody else is going, "That's her, aren't you?" And I'm on the planets and everything. It's pretty cool.
That is a cool experience. I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a movie that I can think of.
Yeah, I was paid. I got paid for doing that.
That's awesome. Yeah, but being in a movie is super cool. And, it's just, they probably made a movie about it because what a cool lifestyle. You know, I mean, such an interest. I bet you meet so many interesting people. And
for sure. I've met some crazy cool people, people that I remain friends with now. The movie is actually about a woman that her husband died and all of a sudden, and she lost her job and it pretty much made her homeless. And she decided to get in a van. She put her stuff in storage and it shows her trying to work like in the sugar beet industry and for Amazon and Ren, which is in South Dakota. And so it kind of showed her life. And then she met up with other van dwellers like Swanky and a couple of other people that are then featured in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings in their troubles.
Do you relate to any of that? I mean, hearing parts of I haven't seen the movie, but hearing you describe it a little bit, I feel like maybe there's some similarities between you and the main character, but do you?
A little bit, because this person and all of these people that I have met and that are in this movie are kind of forced into this lifestyle. For example, Swanky, she makes very little on her Social Security, and she wouldn't be able to afford to rent an apartment and all of that stuff. So a lot of people that I've met were forced into that situation. Mm-hmm. I was not. I've been very fortunate that, you know, I ended up buying this house. So I wasn't forced into that situation.
Yeah. Well, I guess I thought about like the husband dying thing and stuff like that.
Yeah. A lot of widowers. There's a lot of males out there too that lost their spouses. And, I would say 75 to 80% or even more are single persons that are out there traveling. There are a lot of families that have children and they're at homeschooling their children while the parents work online, you know, have online type jobs doing whatever.
I think that's so cool. I mean, obviously because of like the industry I work in and stuff like that, it wouldn't be possible. I mean, it's kind of like an in-person, industry, but I'm kind of a little jealous of people who have the type of work where they can just take their kids, their family and go wherever they want to be and still live the lifestyle that they, that they're accustomed to.
Well, and the kids, just think of what the kids get to see. I mean, of these people post what they're doing, like they're down in Texas or Florida at one of the space centers, and their kids get to go on tours and all these historical places. And it's very interesting to see where they take their kids and how they integrate that into homeschooling.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an education beyond what, I love the type of education that you can't receive in a classroom, that you can't read in a book, experiential stuff that just you have to do it to learn it. And that's it. I kind of chalk that up to that.
Oh, yeah. But people like Anne Marie does, they do that. She could do that wherever you live.
Yeah. Consultants.
What most of them are consultants of some sort.
Yeah. And now with the way that COVID happened and the pandemic, more people realized that, okay, this is the time to go and do it, which it's pretty cool.
Well, I think people have rediscovered themselves that with this COVID and have really, found a fork in the road and they went a different direction. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting to see how that affected change in a lot of people.
Yeah. And I said from the beginning, because I've been through a lot of, a lot of hard times. And just from knowing, I every horrific event that I've been through produced something beautiful. And sure, something like a pandemic, I just knew that, of course there was going to be some horrific things that came out
sure.
of it, but I also knew that it was going to foster, creativity and innovation and something positive was. And I think we're seeing that quite a bit.
Right. Right.
Well, I guess, so speaking of hard times, again, like one of the things that I know, obviously about you, because you're my mom, is that you've been through a bunch of hard stuff and that you've, perseverance, persistence, fortitude, these are all words to me that are, something I really just aspire to, and that I hope that I can help coach other people to, just a sense of resilience. And I think I learned that from you. I think who I am and how that was built into me, for better or worse, and why I am the way I am is because, we went through some hard times and so have you, and we just kept going. What would you say is the hardest things that you've been through? Like what are some events that you look back on now and are like, that was like
other than raising an ornery teenager?
I tell people all the time, you're a saint. I we may get into it on this podcast or whatnot, but it couldn't have been easy. Raising a kid like I was, I was wild, adventurous, wild, independent, not very little regard for authority, and you had to deal with the fallout of a lot of that. So I'm sure that was hard.
Yeah. Every year at the beginning of the school year, it was like, dear God, make this the year that everything clicks and it's okay. And I think I did that for 12 years.
The year would come and the year would go.
It started in kindergarten.
Yeah. And, I think about education a lot, like the education system and the way that classrooms are, having been a kid who struggled so much, like you said, every single year with every single teacher. And because we moved a lot, it was also, it wasn't just the system I was in. It wasn't like one classroom or whatnot.
I think it was the system.
Well, as a whole, right? There's kind of like there is a paradigm of education, and how they do it in California is only very slightly different than how they do it in Baltimore. It's a structure.
Yeah. But do you remember when I went to school with you one day? I think you were in fourth, fifth grade.
Yeah, you sat in the corner and went to every class. I thought it was sixth grade.
I don't remember. That was an eye opener for me because it was like, good God, no wonder you are bored and causing trouble, because it was, every class was boring, and there were so many kids in the class, and the teacher was up there. You know how that comedian goes, "Now, class, turn to page 3. You know, that
Bueller,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. Bueller. Yeah.
And then your math teacher, that elderly math teacher, oh my God. And I think because I'm not good at math, that one made an impact on me, because she made it so boring. I mean, she turned around in her chair, and I'm going to do this, and wrote on the blackboard like this. And then, Ralph, she was doing this. You guys were throwing paper planes and goofing around, and she'd turn around, "Class, stop misbehaving." And then she'd go back to writing stuff. It was terrible. And yeah. I think that was when I made the decision to put you in private school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you did better in that setting because the classes were smaller. You got a little more attention, which I'm not saying you needed attention, but yeah, you did. Because if you were not being challenged in that moment, then you were challenging other people, you know, the teacher, yeah. You know. And it was like that all the way through your school. So I think you did best in the private school, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think something that I had to overcome, well, especially as an adult, and I probably just wasn't aware enough as a kid, was once I got it in my head that I was one of the bad kids, like once I had been made to feel like I was just I was labeled. And yeah. And not only did the teachers and the school treat me like one of the bad kids, but I accepted that label for myself, and I started acting accordingly. And right. That's kind of hard to break out of.
Right. But the thing is, you weren't bad. You know, bad as in bad.
No, of course not.
Angry. And yeah. You disrupted the class because you like to be a comedian and, you know, whatever. So you might consider that you were bad, but I think you were challenging to the teachers. The teachers were forced to find a different way to challenge you and to teach you. And most of them didn't want to even rise to that challenge. You know, they wanted you to fall in line like all the other kids and just do what they say and go on to the next grade. That's what they
right.
wanted. And was not you.
And it's never happened. I've never been that person. Yeah, honestly, yeah. I just not, and that's my desire. I'm actually on I just got asked to be in this thing called the Student Health Advisory Committee for the school district here. And they gave me this, questionnaire about, I don't know, there's like 20 questions on there. And a couple of the questions are like, you know, for my kid, what is it that I hope for her? And like, what do I, you know, the questions are, I'm paraphrasing, but around like, what do I want for her education and what do I want for her life and all these other things. And also then it like expands the questions. Okay. Like, what do you want for like all the kids in the school? And what do you want for the community? And what do you want for the parents? And uh-huh. Because I was that kid that you just described, I want all these kids that to be, to realize at a younger age, their talents, their power, their, you know, and if they're not like everyone else, they shouldn't be made to feel like they're not good enough or that they're an outsider. That should be, I think, celebrated and enhanced and drawn out of them so that by the time they become an adult, whatever we consider adults these days, they're far more functioning and they have more tools in their tool belt to help them to succeed, you know?
Right. I think kids learn differently. Some kids do well in a classroom setting. I think other kids do well in more of a interactive, is that the word I want to say? Interactive type of a situation.
Sure.
You know, and I think they need to identify that early on, because like you were not a classroom
No, I could not sit down. I could not shut up. I couldn't, you know.
And we had you tested for attention deficit. Do you remember that? And
being tested for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the two or three people that tested you said he doesn't have attention deficit. He's bored. They said you were very smart and you were bored in the classroom. And you found a way to occupy yourself, which did not go well in the classroom with the teacher, you know.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of kids who have like a certain combination of characteristics like that. You know, they might be like a tactile learner who's intelligent and then have a high degree of disagreeability, right? And that little combination, you know, needs to be engaged in a different way, you know, and that's really my hope. That's what I'm trying to get the school district here to kind of see is like, how do we identify those kids like as early as possible? And then rather than making them a troublemaker or something, or not, at least not giving them what they need. So they somehow kind of like, they divert themselves, you know, giving them a path for success and how to channel that.
Yeah.
You know,
don't you wonder how different your life would be if the education system figured you out? You know, I mean, I do.
And then I don't, because I don't regret anything. You know, all the stuff that I've gone through, all of those challenges, obviously. I'm having this conversation with you right now, and I've had many conversations with young people. I mean, the reason why I've worked with young people in the past, whether it was in the juvenile justice system or as a social worker and stuff, I can speak their language. You know, right. I understand. I've been on that path, and so I don't have any regrets. I do wonder, though, you know, because knowing what I know now, having been, you know, an educated person and gone through college and master's degree and a business person, if I had expedited that, like if I had realized my talents and my abilities at a younger age, I would not have gone to the army. I told people, I'm not a patriot. I wasn't like, it's not that I'm not a patriot. I didn't go to the army as a patriotic act. It was literally, I had no other options. And that's where I ended up. And thank God I ended up in the units I ended up in, and the experience I had with the leaders that I had, because that was when I learned how to channel everything.
So what do you think the Army did to find your superpower and grab onto that and develop you into what you are today?
I think it was a combination of a couple things. There were people who saw that potential, right? For whatever reason, whatever I did, I don't know. They saw the potential and they just like would not allow me to be substandard to what they thought I was capable of. I mean, just no exceptions. I know you can do this and you are going to rise to that occasion, or I'm going to crush your balls until you do it. and they loved me that much to hold me to that. You know, and that's powerful, you know, because the opposite was that when I was a kid, as a younger person, they almost made it the opposite. Like your potential is down here. So just sit over there in the corner and color until, you know, and just like, don't cause me any troubles. They didn't like try to bring me to my best, you know?
So you say the teachers did that?
Well, yeah, that's as a kid. And that's why the Army was different. The other thing about the Army was the flexibility and the allowance to do things my way. You know, I think that they gave me enough rope. They're like, I know you have potential, you know, maybe I don't see you. I mean, here's the end state. So in the Army, you know, the commander, the whomever says, here's the end state. However you get from here to there, you know, is less important than achieving this end state. And so I had the opportunity to kind of create and design a path to that success in my own way. and to be able to lead other people to do the same thing. And I think that combination of the flexibility and the high standards is really what changed my life, you know?
Well, when we went to your boot camp graduation and you came into our hotel room and made our bed, I went, holy mother God, I don't care what happens from this point on, the Army got Ethan to make a bed. And, you know, it was good.
I don't really remember that, but I remember, like, I was probably showing off, to be honest now, like, looking back now. Like, I wanted you guys to know, I think it was really, I had always felt like a failure to you guys. And I had always felt like a disappointment to you and Dad. And I think that having now some success in the military and stuff, I think I was probably showing off, to be honest. I wanted you to know that I had figured some things out and that I, you know, I remember Dad. I mean, I don't think he was trying to be mean at all. But when I said I was signing up for the Army, he kind of laughed and he kind of said something like along the lines of like, I'll see you soon. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
That's because we thought that someone getting in your face was not going to end up well. If we got in your face, it didn't go well. So right. I think we saw you potentially puffing up that tough guy stuff and not letting the Army do what they needed to do. And you'd end up, you know, boxing someone or in a fight and they'd kick you out. That's what we were afraid of.
Yeah.
And the phone call with Mark, do you remember that? I don't remember the whole thing, but you said, well, if I just shut up and do what they say, all is good. And they're like, oh, my bad.
You're like, I've been saying this for 17 years. So. Well, you know how it is. Like someone, a parent or a spouse or whatever can say something 100 times. And it just doesn't sink in. But then like one other person says it the same exact way, nothing different. And it just somehow clicks, you know?
Well, and I think that perhaps that clicked well with you because they were not your mom or your dad or your teacher. They were more of a role model maybe or something. And you jived with that more than someone being authoritarian, even though in the military, I think they're authoritarian, but different than mom and dad and your teachers at school.
Yeah.
So,
I agree. I don't know. I remember being also, I thought I was a badass going into the military, but I also remember being scared. You know, I remember, you go to 30th AG, which is like it's a reception place on Fort Benning where like, you know, people who are going to be infantrymen all go. And I can remember laying on the bunk, like an open bay bunk, one of the first nights. I hadn't even gone into basic training yet and laying there crying because I was scared. And
I'm sure,
you know, I remember the drill, the first day when you come off of the, you get traveled around in horse trailers. And when you come off and you're going to like wherever your basic training is going to be, and that it's the classic, what you've seen in the movies or whatever, where all the drill sergeants like swarm you and they're screaming in your face. And I still very clearly remember being fucking terrified, you know, and I think that was part of it too. Like in that moment, I was humble and my ego was shrunk down from where it was. And I think that made a difference too. Like I kind of knew like what you and Dad were going to do. I kind of knew what teachers were going to do, but I didn't know what these people were going to do to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I tell people you're a saint all the time for how you got me to being an adult from somehow. Well, do you think that was the hardest thing that you've ever got, you know, was raising a kid, you know, somewhat by yourself? You know, you had Dad around, but.
Well, yeah, because it was year after year after year after year. It wasn't just a something that happened and was done. It was something we struggled. Mark and I had more than a few arguments about child rearing and what to do. And we both had very different ideas. And so it was something that was ongoing, you know. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, because you have, the person you are now is a perfect person, and, you know, to me. So all of that led to where you are now. So I wouldn't go back and change it, but I do kind of wish it would be that little different.
Yeah.
You know, for everybody. Yeah, you were always in trouble.
Always.
And you were, I think you were grounded most of your life, but you didn't care that you were grounded. That did not affect you at all, that we could tell. You know, we took phones away, TVs away, and you didn't care. We never found your soft spot.
Yeah, I think that was the maybe why I was sick, or maybe I guess I was born this way or whatever. But I think another reason why I was good, successful in the Army is because, you know, I'd been through. I mean, there was nothing they could do to me that I pretty much hadn't already gone through before. You know, I tell people all the time, because I was in so much trouble all the time, I lived in an empty room with not a lot of toys, no TV, you know, nothing. You know, I had a set of encyclopedias to entertain me if I got bored, you know, and most of the time that's where I was at, you know, because I was in trouble all the time.
We all knew you were very smart. The way you tested, you know, throughout school, and the teachers would all say, Ethan is very smart. He just doesn't do his homework and he's disruptive in class. And so that was making your grade, that was hurting your grades. And then when you tested for the military and all of the branches were calling us, Coast Guard, Marines, Air Force, Army, you know, Navy, they were all calling. And one of them finally says, well, he tested so well on the test, you know, scored so well on the test. So, of course, everybody's going to be calling because we all want him in our branch of the military.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were very smart. We just never figured out how to direct that. But the Army did.
You want to know a funny story about that test? You take what they call the ASVAB test, which is like it's a aptitude test for the military.
Uh-huh.
I took it in a junior in high school. And I obviously, again, with no intentions of going into the military, but I got like a half day, you know, they gave you a half day out of school. You know, you didn't have to go to class for that morning. But I got so high before I went to before that test. I was like out of my mind, like not, and just because I didn't care about how I did on it. And then it turned out that, like you said, I tested like almost a perfect score on it.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I don't know how all that happened, but.
Yeah. I didn't know you were. I didn't know you were high.
Well, it's not something I go telling a lot of people, I guess, but. But that's the truth. So I think a lot about, though, like if, you know, when we look back on like what if I known then what I know now, and, you know, especially around like health and wellness, like if I had been taking better care of myself and of course I played sports and stuff, but I didn't really apply myself, you know, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But like you've been also now lately, like really working on your health and you know, you've been allowing me to be a part of that with you. So I kind of have some insight to it, but are there things now that you, with your years of wisdom and everything else, kind of wished, oh, maybe I wish I knew that back then.
Oh, I wish I was much more physically active. I wish I had found like something that inspired me, like running or something a little on the competitive edge, but I'm not real competitive, but bicycling. I wish I had found something a lot earlier, because now it's a big struggle to get into the habit of doing it, because I've had 55 years of not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I want to do it. You know, in high school, I was in track and I did okay for a 4'11" little person, you know.
Yeah, you did. The funny thing about that is you did track, but you didn't just do track. You did hurdles, didn't you?
I did hurdles, and it's so funny because I watch people do hurdles, and they just glide over the hurdles, and I had to go run and jump, jump. And it was, it's funnier than how to watch that and remember what I did because I was so short. And, you know, they couldn't even lower them enough for me to glide over them.
What coach thought it was a good idea? What did the rest of the team look like for them to think that it was a good idea to put you as the hurdles person?
Keep in mind, I was in a really small school, and almost everybody had to be on in the sport, so you had enough to form a team.
Would you graduate with like 9 kids or 11 kids
11.
Or something?
There was 11 in my senior graduating class.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the boys, they had to play football and basketball. Otherwise, they didn't have enough for a team.
Yeah.
And we played, was it 6-man, 8-man football?
8-man. You know, usually smaller schools play 8-man football.
Right. Yeah. So we played 8-man football and we barely had enough people for a team.
That's crazy.
So there wasn't very many bench warmers.
I love going back. So my family, for the audience, my family's from Dorrance, Kansas, and Dorrance is a tiny farming community. I think now there's 175 people in that town.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, 175 people in that town, and I don't know. There's something about there's like a sense of pride for me about that, knowing that like that's where you're from and that's where my people are from, and I don't know why I feel that way, but I just. It's so tiny. And life is just very different there.
It's very different.
And of course, you left there at a very young age. And, you know, you
as
lived
soon
in
as
big
I could.
City. Yeah. Yeah. What was that about? Why did you leave?
Because
as soon
this
as you
is
could?
All I had known. And I knew that there was, you know, we didn't travel when we went on vacation. We didn't go to places. And I wanted to go. See places and experience more than what this tiny community had to offer. And, you know, I went as far as Oklahoma and, you know, initially, and then ended up in Nevada. And, you know, that's when Oklahoma is where I met Mark. And then Mark moved to Nevada and then I eventually followed him there. I wanted to get out of here.
Yeah. And so, okay, so the first place you went was Oklahoma, like before I was born?
No, I went to school about an hour away from here to a Votech in Beloit. And that was my first year about away from home. Then I moved to Hayes, and Hayes is where you were born. And I think you were, it was on your second birthday that we were moving to Oklahoma. I was working for that respiratory therapy company, they provided respiratory staff in rural hospitals. And so I was in Oklahoma with them, and then I went to Albuquerque, New Mexico with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
So I didn't realize you met dad in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I thought you met him in
Wilmington
Albuquerque.
Hospital. In Wilmington Hospital.
Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't like him when I first met him.
No? Why not?
No, because he had a really weird sense of humor, and I wasn't used to that. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and he just had a weird sense of humor and was really sarcastic, and I never knew when he was joking and when he was serious, and so I had a kind of a hard time with that. And but then, of course, that changed after I got to know him. So.
Yeah. Was it
he
hard?
Was the PA.
He was the PA that you worked for or worked with.
Right.
I guess.
That was his first place to work after he got out of PA school.
Okay. Was it weird, like trying to date being like a single mom, or like, was that fine for you?
No, it was hard. I don't know why. Though I guess there are some men that didn't want a family, you know, that wasn't theirs, so to speak. And then, of course, finding a babysitter. And it was expensive. you know, for a single mom, you know, I had to watch my pennies. So finding a babysitter and going out and stuff. I wasn't a party girl as far as going out to bars and stuff like that. So, it was kind of odd. Not odd. Yeah. It was just challenging.
Yeah. I can only imagine. But I mean, also, like I said, that's one of the things that I'm like most proud of you for, because, you know, you had me at, you got pregnant at 18, had me at 19 or something like that.
About that. Yeah. Just before. Yeah. August to December is when I turned 20.
You would have had every excuse. You would have had at least a good excuse to, you know, find some waitressing job or something like that, which you did. I mean, I know you waited tables and stuff to make ends meet, but and you could have just stayed that way. And, you know, I think we were on welfare for a little while. You could have just kind of rode that out but you did it. Like during that time, like you said, you went to become a respiratory therapist. And then I remember you became a nurse's aide.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you became an RN, and then you became a nurse practitioner, you know, down the road.
Right.
And not easy when, you know, like you were working while you were going to school and all that stuff.
Yeah. But I probably would not have done the nurses that went to school without Mark, because Mark was able to financially support us. And, you know, I still worked, but he was able to provide, you know, rent and groceries and all of that stuff while I went to school. Otherwise, I probably would not have been able to do that.
Why did you choose medicine? Like, why did you choose nursing, do you think? I mean, because you started from a young age. I mean, like, that's what you gravitated towards.
Well, you know, I started out as a nurse's aide. I just liked that population of in a nursing home. I've always been drawn to the geriatric field. And I just kind of liked it. I don't know exactly why. It's just what I started doing. I was comfortable in it. And every step that I took, I wanted to get better and go to the next step. So it took a while. I was older when I graduated as an RN, and when I was 51 when I graduated as a nurse practitioner. So I was a late bloomer in all of those.
Right. But again, you could have easily just said, oh, I'm too old for this, and just like not done it. But you didn't let that happen. Do you think, I ask a lot of people this, and I'm curious what your answer is. Do you think people, there's something that you're like born to do? Like, what is it? Like you said that, something got you into that field. And you said you were comfortable with it. I think the word you used was like, I was comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to think about like being uncomfortable as being something to at least try to do often. But also I believe that like whatever you're naturally drawn towards, whatever your natural inclinations are, I say what you would do for free, like whatever you would do for free, if money wasn't a thing, you should try to do that for a living. Mm-hmm. Was medicine that for you, or do you like, do you think you were born to go into medicine, or did you, that's just something that you did just to make ends meet?
I think part of the draw was money, because you made good money as a nurse and a nurse practitioner. But it was also something I liked doing. If it's something I was born to do, I don't know. Cause I consider myself kind of creative, and I think what I was born to do was more down a creative route. I don't know what that is or what should have been. So I don't know that I was born to be in the medical field.
So if you felt like, because I agree with you, I think one of the reasons why I'm creative and like why I've gravitated towards small business and creating, you know, solutions for people that, you know, people are willing to pay for and helping solve problems and all the things around being an entrepreneur. I feel like a lot of that came from you. And so why didn't you go that direction? do you think?
I think because I didn't feel talented enough in that, you know, whatever it would have been, I didn't feel smart enough, talented enough to do it. And there was a lot of risks involved because, you know, it's not like a creative route has a specific money to be made. You know, you're taking a risk. So mm-hmm. I think nursing and all of that was a non-risk-taking direction to go.
Yeah. Why don't you think you felt talented or skilled enough?
I just never felt that. I never had any education to kind of bring that out, or no one to support that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have anybody to help point me in a direction or say, hey, you know, you're pretty good at this. Why don't you do this? You know, mm-hmm. and I didn't feel talented enough to take that risk and do it on my own.
Okay. I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to that. You know, there's something that kind of calls us. It's always in our ear. It's always in the back of our mind, but we go another route because we're too scared to listen to that tiny little voice and really to jump feet first or head first into right. the deep end, you know?
Right. And I don't know if you remember in Las Vegas when I did try to do the photography and the video, mm-hmm. videography. Yeah. My bad idea was that we focused on musicians, and somewhere soon into that little adventure, you realize that musicians had no money. And so we were not getting paid. We were getting paid very little. People would write hot checks, and so it was a big failure financially on that little adventure that I took. And I think that reeled me back in and said, well, let's take a non-riskier route, you know?
Yeah.
So I think failure diverted me.
Yeah. Well, and it might have reinforced if you already had the feeling of not being talented or skilled, you know, if you had a little bit of a confidence issue, bumping up against failure can certainly just reinforce that and be like, okay, I'm not going to go any further here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I always thought that was one of the coolest parts of my childhood. Honestly, it was like watching you do that. Like, you know, I obviously wasn't aware of the financial part of it because, you know, as a kid, you don't really pay any attention to that, but I always thought it was real. And I think that's where I got it from. I mean, now that I look back, I think you doing that gave me the inspiration and it spurred to me like, oh, I can create my own thing. Like I can do what I want to do. And seeing you do, and dad being a musician, you know, watching him be on stage and, you know, I think both those two things were very inspirational to me.
Right. And Mark loved it, but you know, it definitely was not anything that he could make money from at that point. You know, he had to keep his day job, and he loved being a musician and being on stage. You know, he was good at that and he loved it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I remember that.
It was very interesting. You know, he got to warm up for Molly, the initial band for Molly Hatchet and not Alice Cooper. Was it Alice Cooper? Alice Cooper. And, you know, and these bands, they were not in their heyday at that point.
No.
They were, you know, playing in small venues in Las Vegas.
But still, yeah.
But it was cool to meet all these people. Leonard Skinner band.
Yep. Yeah, I remember all that stuff and just thinking that was so cool. I mean, yep. I had a very unusual childhood in that, you know, most people have a living room, which for a large part of my life, we didn't have. We had a band room, and I'd walk in there, and there it's just piled high with speakers and amplifiers, drum kits, guitars, microphones everywhere in there. And I always just remember just being like, this is so cool. You know, this is, you know, just, you know, I didn't find it to be an inconvenience at all, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting few years for sure.
Okay. So I want to switch gears a little bit. Well, first, before I switch gears too much, what were there things that you thought I was going to ask you about that you want to talk about, or any topics that we should talk about?
Not as far as our personal lives go. No, I think you've asked the questions I kind of sort of expected, and it took a few curves I wasn't expecting, but that's good. So I'm good with it.
Okay. I want to talk about your health. I want to talk about your habits and things. Cause I kind of alluded to it earlier, but you've been doing these, I need to find a different word for it, cause I don't like calling it a challenge, but that's what we call it. It's the 30-day habit challenge, but I'd like to call it something else when I have time to think about it. But nonetheless, it's a coaching, it's 30 days of coaching that helps people to really optimize habits that help them to feel great about their days. Get into a more optimal physical condition, whether that be through a physical activity and nutrition and sleep and hydration and a lot of other things. And you've been participating in these for now over a year.
Yep.
And how are you feeling about all of that? And like, what do you feel like is working for you?
Well, I think it's worked very well. Nutrition, I think, has been the biggest thing that I've come away with as far as portion control and the macros and understanding the proteins and the carbs and the fat kind of an issue, and not focusing on just watching your calories. Because I think I know that up to that point, I was only looking at calories and I wasn't looking at the quality of those calories. And I just struggled with weight gain, even though I wasn't eating. I was skipping meals. I wasn't drinking water. I had a lot of nutritional bad habits to overcome. And I think that's probably been the biggest eye-opener over the year. Exercise has just still been a struggle for me to just get in the habit of doing it and doing it. I don't like to sweat.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, why do you think that the physical activity is the harder part for you?
I think it takes a big commitment. And I just haven't figured out how to get that commitment off and get it going. I'm a natural born couch potato, and I have a hard time overcoming that. And yeah, living in this small town, and I know this is no excuse, but the closest gym is 20 miles away. I have stuff here. You've bought me stuff to work on my own. And in a lot of ways, I prefer working out here at the house, because I'm not wasting 20 minutes to drive to the gym and 20 minutes back. But I have no good excuse on why I haven't taken off. And I know that if I had been doing better at that, my weight loss and muscle gain would be a heck of a lot better. But I've lost, 22 pounds, I think, in a year.
You've done great with what you've been doing.
Yeah. And I can see it in my face and the way my clothes fit. My endurance is a little bit better when I do walk a mile or run a mile or try to run a mile, you know, and some of that stuff. So I know I've improved, but I'm a little disappointed in myself in that I haven't really got the exercise thing down a lot better.
Yeah. Not accepting any excuses from you, but it does make a difference. You know, environment is a thing. You know, people often, what looks like a people problem is actually a environment problem, a situation problem. And I think a lot of people listening to this might be able to relate to it. You know, there's things in their life or in where they live or whatever that just, it's an obstacle that's just enough to make it not easy to overcome or adapt.
Right. And another thing is, I don't have an exercise buddy. You know, there's no one here. Right. There's not one single person here that goes to the gym, that even I don't even see people going for walks on a regular basis. So I don't have anybody to say, hey, Bev, let's go to the gym. And, you know, if I go, oh, I don't really like it. No, Bev, let's go. You know, I think sometimes I need that kick in the butt to get busy and do it.
You know, an idea just occurred to me, and I'll the people who do the challenge, the habit challenge remotely, like you do, maybe we should have you guys do like video workouts together. You know, like we should try to get you guys to like that. You know, so you're going to the gym together, but from wherever you are, like we did during when the pandemic first, like when all the gyms were shut down and everything, we just had those video workouts, and you know, people. It kept people on track, you know?
Right. Well, I think schedules is probably a big
thing.
You know, I'm retired, but I think almost everybody that I know that's part of your, the challenges are, you know, working parents. And, you know, so I think schedules would be a little bit of an issue for doing that.
Yeah.
But I think when you implemented the buddy thing, I think that did make a difference, because we had like two or three people that would say, hey, did you exercise today? Or I'm going to the gym. What are you doing? And, you know, I think that did help a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It helps to just have someone like, you know, kind of reminding you and inspiring you. They're like, hey, I went to the gym. And you're like, well, if they did it, you know, I can do it too. You know?
That little competitive edge kind of kicks in, like, oh gosh, you know. I can't let them beat me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, what are some things that you would like to do better with your health? You know, fitness being, sounds like maybe one, but are there other things?
Exercise. You know, I think what's important for me is to be able to do stuff with the grandkids and keep up with them. You know, like when we've gone on hikes and stuff, I'm back there huffing and puffing, and you guys are ahead of me. And, you know, that time I went with Anjali to, is it Enchanted? What's that male, that rock?
The thing? Enchanted Rock. Yeah.
Enchanted Rock. Man, I had to stop so many times. You know what? That was been 3 or 4 years ago. We had to stop a lot for grandma to catch her breath. And, you know, so it's those kinds of things that I don't want to be, I don't want to feel old. So there it is. I don't want to feel old. And I want to stay as physically active as I can until I can't anymore. And, you know, I have no health problems. I have no excuse for not being able to go out and do things. You know, I don't have hip problems, knee problems, heart problems, you know, so I have no excuse. But keeping up with the grandkids. That's, and you know, I like kayaking and hiking. And so I want to be able to do those things.
Yeah. I love that. And I mean, that's your why, and that's your inspiration. And I think a lot of people don't keep that end state, like I was mentioning earlier, like that end state as the motivation to be like, oh yeah, I probably should get out of bed and work out today, you know, so that, you know, 'cause it's hard to think about some distant future.
Yeah.
It's not always right at the top of mind, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, any questions for me? Anything that, any burning questions?
Well, first off, what's your favorite exercise?
My favorite exercise? I always say that the squat is the king of all exercise, that if someone told you could only do one exercise for the rest of your life, I would choose the squat, because I think it just has, I think it has, so many, it incorporates, it's almost a total body movement. So it incorporates so many different parts of the body. It has a lot of payoff. It has an effect on your hormones. It'll have an effect on, even just, flexibility and mobility and all that other stuff. So when I was teaching the Army Master Fitness Trainer course, I would always, when I taught how to do the squat, that would always be kind of my quick little umbrella, elevator speech for that, is I think this should be the one. And if you can't squat, it's also a really I think it's a high indicator of just overall health and well-being for a person. So if you start losing the ability to squat, that's not a great sign.
That's a good thought, because I tell my mom to kind of do a modified squat, you know, with a chair, you know, a normal chair behind her and stuff. And she, you know, then I think that would help strengthen her legs, to keep sure. prevent her from falls and stuff like that. And, you know, she does not walk very far at all. Her knees start hurting or something. But I think the squats would be good for her. And I thought you were going to say something like burpees, because that seems to be a real, you know, multi.
Yeah, it's another one that's like a total body. But for me, it doesn't incorporate those real big, it does incorporate large muscle groups in that your legs are somewhat involved, but it doesn't involve them enough for me to make it my, what I think is my favorite movement.
Cool.
Anything else?
I do have another question for you. That's not physical therapy.
Okay. Yeah.
Relation. What's a dream of yours that you have yet to accomplish?
Oh, well, you know, I'm a dreamer. So I have a lot of dreams. The one that's coming to mind right now, I'm building a Bastrop Fitness project. And, what I would really like to do is take that idea, for smaller communities where, they haven't quite yet, you know, they don't have like the big chain gyms or, you know, gyms like what I believe in that are really effective for people. I'd like to develop little, what I call hubs of health and wellness into smaller communities that don't quite have access to that yet. Take a building that you put a fitness center, there may be some yoga, some spin classes, some sort of like, providers, whether they be physical therapists or chiropractors or massage therapists, that just help people to be well. I'd like to do that a few more times than just this one here in Bastrop.
So physical fitness obviously is an issue in this tiny little town in Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And I've tried to think like Ethan and figure out something to do here. And really the only thing I can think of is at the park, do those stations that you mm-hmm. go to, you know, and you do something.
Oh, yeah.
There's
yeah,
one in Russell.
A lot of gyms have those.
Yeah. There's one in Russell near the hospital that I think it has 18 stations or something like that.
Yeah.
Our park here is very small, so we wouldn't be able to have that many. But, finding grants and the money to do that is a big issue for a small town like this.
I'd start even more simple, because that's like city property. It's a city park. There's a lot of red tape. I mean,
I'm on the city council now, right?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Yeah. You had talked about, congratulations.
I'm only in my second month or so.
Oh, cool.
So that's one of my agendas, is okay. to do something to promote health.
I would back that off a little bit, and there's probably like a big enough garage somewhere that's not being maximized or used very well. And I just create
gym.
Like a, there
the
you go,
gym.
The high school gym that's because your school burned down. It's just the gym there. So yeah. I would invest in, or even, I mean, it doesn't have to be great equipment, but I would just create a city or town gym that's free to the citizens there. And then there's going to be a kid there. There's going to be somebody who's interested in being a trainer, you know, mm-hmm. Somebody who needs a job that can manage the gym. And, you know, I think that you talk about changing lives, talk about making a decision and making a move that, I mean, for that town, like you said, nobody in that town, none of their kids. I bet a lot of people move away from that town because they don't feel like they can become their optimal self.
Right.
You know,
well, most of the people that live here have lived here forever. They're like me. They lived here and then they came back. But I see all the obstacles and all the problems, and it's kind of frustrating. Yeah.
Every one of those problems is an opportunity.
Right, right. But the gym is actually managed by the Alumni Association. And so it's already, I think they already have insurance and cool stuff, you know, because they have some events. There are not very many. I think the challenge would be to find something that doesn't require a lot of equipment, you know, but maybe stuff you just bring in yourself, like a yoga mat or the stretchy bands or,
I mean, maybe I haven't been in there. I haven't been in there, but if it's just a big open space, you could just have
a court.
It's a basketball court. So you could have somebody who has like a group, who's going to host a group workout. Like you said, they could say like buy a set of dumbbells or buy a kettlebell or something and a yoga mat, and everybody just brings their own stuff. And you could mostly just do body weight, but mm-hmm. that's how I started. You remember mm-hmm. I had a boot camp out in a park.
Yeah.
People didn't, I brought what I could, and they, you know, no, I guess nobody who came brought anything of their own, but it was just mostly body weight stuff,
right.
You know?
Right. And the good point is the football field is right there. You know, it's on grass now. It's not, you know, and it used to be the track. So you could use that to run or do some outdoor stuff. There's no hills like you made us do. You remember those hills?
Oh, yeah.
That were, so, no, there's none of those. And there's no park or there's no benches to run up and down. Yeah, you know,
you can.
That.
Oh. If I were on city council and I wanted to improve the health of the citizens of that town, I would simply just hire a trainer. I would hire a part-time trainer with whatever city funds you have and just tell them to be as creative they can be. You know, mm-hmm. they'll find ways to do it. They'll try a few things. Some things will work, some things won't. But just offer free opportunities to that town, and the city wouldn't even have to pay somebody that much mm-hmm. to be a part-time trainer.
I'll have to check on that. I don't know where I would go to find a trainer other than maybe start at the recreation center in Russell, which is the gym that I go to, and see if there's someone there that I think the trainer actually travels from Hayes.
Somebody will have a nephew, a cousin, somebody who's interested in fitness who maybe isn't certified now, but it would be willing to get certified or something, you know.
I mean,
there's always people like that around.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to consult with you and have you help us set something up.
I would love to. I think it'd be so cool to help the people of Dorrance to be healthier.
Yeah. Right now, our biggest fundraising for the park is we're tearing down the bathroom and building a new bathroom. So we've actually got a grant for that, and we have to match it. So that's our challenge.
Nice. Well, that's cool. I'm so glad you're on that city council.
Yeah,
someday,
it's gonna be fun.
That's an aspiration of mine, is to kind of somehow get into some sort of, you know, a position where I can help a large community of people rather than just kind of, you know, how I'm doing it now.
Right.
But all righty. Well, we've definitely been chatting for quite a while, and, you know, I think we should probably wrap it up, barring any other questions or anything that you wanted to talk about.
No, it was fun.
Yeah, really fun. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure our listeners will kind of get a little bit of insight into who I am and where I come from, because you are where I come from. And, again, I'm just so thankful for the person that you've been in my life. Not only, you know, a lot of my success is directly related to you. So thank you for that. I love you very much. And
I love you too. And you've been an inspiration for me. And I'm glad I'm able to look at you and think, you know, the kid ended up very good despite all the setbacks I felt that we created.
Yeah. Who would have thought that we'd be here now?
Yeah.
Well,
so I'm very proud of you.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate it. I'm proud of you. You continue to do a lot of big things. So, are the Chiefs going to win tomorrow night or Monday night? You know, the Chiefs are playing Monday night.
The poor Chiefs. I don't know what happened to them this year.
It's going to turn out to be a good thing. They needed a year like this, but It's been disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we had high expectations for them to maintain that level of playing. And, you know, you can't do that. You know, I don't think you can maintain that like that.
Well, everybody's playing. Everybody thought the Chiefs were the team that had to be beat. So everybody's building their team to beat us.
Right.
You know, we can't build our team to beat everybody else.
Right. And they've changed their strategies based on Kansas City Chiefs history. And so we haven't figured out how to change our strategy to keep them on their toes, you know?
Yep.
So bless their hearts. You know, I'm always a Chiefs fan, even when they're not doing good. So, you know, I'm there rooting for them no matter what.
Same, you know, I'm curious to see how they turn it around this year, but anyway, go Chiefs.
I hope they get to the playoffs because it's not looking good.
Yeah. Not likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right, Mom. Well, I love you. Have a good rest of your day.
I'm so grateful that you joined us for this episode of Doing the Work podcast. Providing you with value is why I do this, and I hope you got something out of this episode that you can put into action into your life. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please share this episode with your friends and family who are looking to level up in life. Sign up for our email list at www.doingworkpodcast.com to receive special offers and discounts from our sponsors. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, and anywhere podcasts are hosted. Thanks again for joining the Doing the Work podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.